With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, Sweeney Murdy on the Fan. It's 8:04 in New York, and here till 10 o'clock. Chris McMonagle comes your way then. 877-337-6666 is your number. It is official. Kenley Jansen, after getting two outs on two pitches, got the third out he needed. Two really easy innings for Jansen. This time it was in a save situation. Last night was a four-run lead. Tonight he holds on to the 3-1 victory. And the Dodgers and Braves are headed to a Game 7 in the National League Championship Series. That is tomorrow night. Game 7 in the American League Championship Series is coming up in about half an hour. And the Rays and the Astros will do battle in Game 7 there. And I will be here to walk you through the early innings of that before I settle in to watch myself. And, well, we'll see which one of these teams makes it to the World Series. And that starts Tuesday, by the way, in case you're wondering. The off days are back in the schedule as well after games 2 and 5. Hold on, I just stepped on my own mic cord here. There we go. It's one of the smallest part of my problems here in the home office tonight. The power surge at 5:50 really didn't help. Let's bring in my friend CJ Nitkowski. You hear him on MLB Network Radio. I caught him this morning on Loud Outs with Ryan Spilborg. He's always a fun way to spend some Saturday time driving around listening to those two guys. CJ, how you doing tonight?
Sweeney, I'm doing great, man. How are you doing? It sounds like you got a little mess going on over there.
you got a power surge,
everything okay?
You're used to working from home, right?
That's right. Uh-huh.
Has the power ever gone out minutes before you were supposed to go on the air?
So I know I've gotten lucky with that, but I definitely have had my messes. Sometimes I'll roll over my cord with my, because it's so long, with my desk chair, and then I don't realize it, and then I try to get up, or I move, and I pull it off my face. That's always a fun one. And then I have to be careful. So those little connections that we use to do remotes, and I know pretty much every show I do for XM, is a remote. The battery, the power cord is a little loose that plugs into it. And it does have a backup battery, but if it falls out and you don't realize it, and then the battery runs out of juice, you're just off the air. So that actually happened to me the other day in the middle of asking Matt Kemp a question.
Oh.
And luckily, Ryan Spilborg picked me up. And it was like, I really wanted the answer to the question I was asking him about when he finished second to Ryan Braun with an MVP,
right?
And that was the year that Braun cheated. I was like, listen, you're one of the few guys that can kind of talk about how Aaron Judge might feel about Jose Altuve. Like, at what point does that go away? Does it ever go away, right? You were in the same exact situation. Braun took steroids. We know that Altuve cheated. Does he ever get over it? The next thing I know, I was talking to myself. But that kid's not fair, so I never got to hear his answer.
How long did it take you to figure out that he wasn't silent, that he wasn't ignoring you, that something on your end went wrong?
Yeah, that's a good time. It usually takes about 5 or 6 seconds, and you're like, oh, it got really quiet here. You look over, and your machine's not lit up anymore.
CJ Nitkowski, our guest. You hear him all the time on MLB Network Radio. So the Dodgers have just forced Game 7, and I mentioned this about an hour ago to Ed Coleman. The Dodgers-Braves series has me, I'm not really sure how to think about the good hitting beats, you know, good pitching beats good hitting. The Dodgers didn't blow the doors off the Braves today, but they had two home runs off the best starter of, you know, the best starter the Dodgers have in the first inning of this ball game, and they rode that to the 3-1 victory. Where has that shifted because of how big the home run ball is and what kind of damage teams are doing with the home run ball? Are we still in the frame of mind that good pitching beats good hitting, or has that kind of taken a few dents recently?
I think it's absolutely taken a couple of dents. I mean, you look at some of the better pitchers in the game and some of the issues ultimately ended up with a really good pitching matchup in this Game 6 in the National Championship Series. I mean, yes, Max Freebus of a couple of home runs early, and then he settles down and pitches into the seventh inning, which was pretty impressive. So he did a really nice job of bouncing back. But I think that, you know, you're looking at two of the better offenses, I think, in the postseason, especially on the National League side with the Dodgers and the Braves. And yet we saw some back and forth, and we've seen times where they often get held down. And then we've seen some times where those offenses have exploded just in this series alone. And so a lot of back and forth there. So, yeah, I think I've gotten away from that a little bit. And, of course, it's also the different ways that we see pitching used, right? In last night's ball game, you get A.J. Minter, who's a reliever, hadn't started since he was in college, and he strikes out 7 in his 3 innings hit to work, which we've never seen in the postseason where a pitcher is throwing 3 innings or less and had 7 strikeouts. So I think part of it has to do with how you treat it, right? We know that the Rays, and we'll see what happens here tonight, but the idea of how they use their staff at times and gives them the ability to hold down some pretty good offenses, but then all of a sudden you get the one guy who doesn't show up that day, like the one reliever who just doesn't have it, and you can't hold that good offense down. So I think it's changed a little bit, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that these hitters are a little bit smarter, I think, and certainly have much more information than they've ever had.
You know, and information is one thing, but there's still a premium on the, you know, the face-to-face, you know, having a history with these pitchers and hitters. And now Minter's not a great example because he's, you know, he's had a little bit more time than some of these other guys the Braves have thrown out there. But I was mentioning this with Eddie when the show started. I think one of the things actually that might have played in the Braves' favor a little bit is that they're forced to go deep into their rotation. You know, they might have gotten knocked out already if they had to throw out, you know, Hamels and Fultonavich and these guys and Soroka. Who knows? But you've got a bunch of guys now who this great Dodgers lineup did not have a great history with. Now, it could turn on its ear. You know, you might end up with what happened in Game 3. You might get Bryce Wilson, or you might get Kyle Wright when you're throwing some mystery at a lineup like that. But I have a feeling that's played in their favor a little bit, that they have that mystery element facing the Dodgers in the series.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? Ian Anderson is a good example of that as well. And then in the year in which there is, you know, the region play, where you don't play every team in the National League, right? You're only playing those that are in your quote-unquote region this year, the way we did it with East, West, and Central. That has played into this as well. And then you get situations like Tony Gonsolin, who threw okay, but he didn't find out he was starting until just before the game, and he hadn't pitched since the regular season, right? Yeah. So then you got guys that have been thrown in a couple of weeks, and what can they do? And then, you know, watching David Weather's son pitch for the Padres coming out of the bullpen, guy never been in the big leagues, you know?
Yes.
And so there's no information. There's a lot of these guys. It was really amazing to see just even throughout the regular season how many players that had not been above A-ball that all of a sudden were in the major leagues. There's not a lot of information there, and you feel like that would play to their advantage as long as they're throwing strikes and hitting their spots, and that's usually how it does go. So I think it's a great point, is that there's not the data, and I say data meaning like your own data from stepping in the box against the guy and remembering either what his stuff looks like or what it looks like to you or how he pitched you because you hadn't seen him.
We're talking with CJ Nikowski, MLB Network Radio. One of the things that we discussed, and I don't know how you're going to see him used in Game 7 or if you'll see him at all, but as happens every October, Clayton Kershaw's legacy becomes a big part of the discussion. We kicked it around yesterday over on MLB Now, on MLB Network, and you know, there's still not a great answer to this, CJ, because you know, he is one of the 5 best pitchers of the last 15-20 years, yet he's got a postseason resume that doesn't look like anybody else's. He's never had that redeeming championship to just knock away everything else and all the other, you know, I'm watching, you know, A-Rod's on the set, and for all the postseasons that were a disaster for him, 2009 stands out because he performed well and got a championship out of it, and you can kind of erase all that. Other pitchers have had the same thing. You know, Greg Maddux got his ring and doesn't have to worry about those other failures. What do you think of when you think of Clayton Kershaw and a legacy that has two distinct factors to it between regular season dominance and postseason? Coin flip.
Yeah, it's complicated, right? I think David Price you could put on that list as well, those guys that you've gone through that didn't really get it done, but they got the one time they did, and they win a championship, and you don't talk about it nearly as much. And so for Clayton Kershaw, I guess he needs the rest of his team to help him maybe put this behind him. I know he's frustrated about it. You know that he wants that ring. But it hasn't happened yet. Now, I think he's looked pretty good, and he's thrown the ball well. And he's had his moments, right? There have been times where he's delivered, some really big games in the postseason, but we just don't talk about them because there's not a championship to go along with it. That was one thing that Ryan Spielborg had said this morning as we were kind of going through this a little bit and saying, you know, has it, can you tell me the best start that Clayton Kershaw has ever had, or do you remember the best start he's ever had in the postseason? And I thought it was a good question because for me the answer was no, not that I have a great memory to begin with, but there are guys that have had memorable moments that you do remember. Madison Bumgarner is certainly one of those guys, and Curt Schilling is one of those guys, and John Smoltz and Jack Morris are those guys, right, where they've done it in really big spots. And for whatever strange reason, even though he has, I think I saw today, he's got like 15 quality starts in the postseason, which is absurd. It's a high number. I mean, Andy Pettit's got the most because he's got the most opportunities. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of nuts to think he's delivered a couple of eight-inning shutout performances, including one this year. But yet, we still don't feel like he's been the guy that we want to see because there's been some real struggles there as well. You go look, you break it down by inning. It is amazing to look at his seventh inning there for a while. He's got like a 13 ERA in the postseason in the seventh inning. There were some real bad blow-ups, especially a couple of years ago against the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, part of that was because they just didn't have the bullpen to back him up. And so they pushed him. It's so opposite of what they do now with the Dodgers, right? They can't wait to get a starter out of the game. Yeah. There was a time where they had to keep them in there longer, and that really did hurt. Clayton Kershaw didn't have the support that he needed. So perhaps if he had a bullpen that was similar to one that they have now, 4 or 5 years ago, it might be a completely different story. But it's so strange because the ERA, I think, is in the top 10 of guys with at least 10 starts in the postseason in the wrong direction, right, as far as one of the top 10 worst. I think he's tied ninth with Vita Blue. So it is a little bit complicated because he's up over a four. But you're right, man, a championship and even a decent performance in the World Series makes that all go away.
We're talking with CJ Nitkowski here on MLB Network Radio. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. I know you had your eye on this type of career post-playing baseball for a while, but I think we kind of jump-started that, if I'm not mistaken, as the 04 Yankees, who you were a part of for part of the regular season, were in the process of blowing a 3-0 lead. You were on our radio station nightly breaking down the games of Steve Summers, were you not?
I was, yeah. It was a real treat for me, too. You know, growing up in the area, and Steve's one of the best. A lot of great memories from listening to him over the years. And I've always tried to do a little bit of work while I was playing. But, yeah, that is how it kind of started for me. But it was actually Bob Valvano came to me in 1999 when I was playing in Detroit, just asked me if I wanted to help him out maybe in the postseason on the radio. And so I did that with him for 3 years. And then I was like, well, yeah, this is kind of interesting. I kind of like this. You know, I always liked it even when I would see you in New York. I just like always talk and shop about the business and the industry. And I definitely I definitely was intrigued by the idea if it could be something that I do afterwards. But, yeah, that was a lot of fun and great experience. I think I still have some of those tapes from 2004.
So, do you remember what the feeling was like as each game progressed? I mean, we're watching it now again. The Astros are trying to do the same thing, obviously. They've come back from 3-0. They forced this game 7. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the circumstances of that, but Do you happen to remember anything about what you kind of felt about, like, was it really going to happen? We had never seen it before, CJ. This was the Yankees who always beat the Red Sox, no matter what happened or got in their way. They always figured it out. Do you remember? Did you think there was a inevitability to that? Were you completely thrown off by what the way it happened?
Of course. I mean, first of all, because it had never happened, and then the big part of that was that it was the Red Sox, and the Red Sox never beat the Yankees, right? You go back to even just the year before, the infamous Pedro game with Bronson Arroyo on today, and we were revisiting that whole situation and then going into the World Series. And so, yeah, the entire time, even after the 3 straight losses, you know, at that point, I'm just an observer and a fan and just hoping for the best because I wanted a World Series ring that I didn't deserve, and I would have been perfectly fine taking one. and it would have been a nice piece to have, and my kids would have been super happy now as they get a little bit older to be able to look at that, and I would have had no shame in my game about having one. So I anticipated that one was coming. But I was like, well, you know, we'll get to this last game, and it's still not going to matter. Because it always goes this way. This is how it always ends, so it doesn't even matter that they came back. And to watch that game, especially late, right, because I think it's when they really started to open it up. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on the air with Steve when I think Johnny Damon hit a big home run to right field, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I even reacted to it at the moment, and he was kind of having some fun with the fact that I was heartbroken as far as what was going on in real time. But, yeah, I never thought. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, it's been so long now that there's probably some younger Yankees fans that don't realize that it never went that way. The Red Sox always lost to the Yankees, and they could never get past them. And it was a great time to be a Yankee fan, especially, you know, if you had been one prior to that, right, had to live through some of the stuff in the 80s and into the early 90s before it turned around, it was just always fun and almost automatic that the Red Sox were going to come out on the losing end against the Yankees.
I'm gonna channel my inner Steve Summers here, but don't you feel heartbroken that there are 11-year-old Yankee fans out there who've never seen their team win a World Series?
Oh, it's brutal, man. I mean, my timing was brutal. I mean, I was young when they won 77 and 78, but I was only, I think, 4 and 5 years old.
Yeah.
So for most of my life, it was the struggles of, you know, there were some good times in the 80s, but for the most part, the struggles of the 80s and into the early 90s, and I was drafted in 94. And then, of course, everything really took off in 96. But at that point, I'd already pitched against the Yankees and pitched poorly. And I was telling people, as soon as the first time you walk in, whoever your team was growing up, the first time you walk into that stadium and you get your butt kicked, you were no longer a fan of that team. And
right.
So at that point, that's right when the run started. Just as I pitched, I got to go up against Jimmy T, and that was kind of fun to do in 1996. But then, yeah, that was it, man. And then they decided, okay, well, CJ's out. Let's go ahead and we'll do some great things here. And that's exactly what happened.
I want to know, the dynamic here is kind of different, and I'm kind of fascinated by it. We all know what the Astros might have faced if they had to play in front of crowds this year, right? I mean, everybody hates them. Well, they're going to the Rays are the home team for Game 6 and 7 in this series. All it means is that they bat last. The Red Sox had to go into Yankee Stadium and kind of defeat that head-on with the full crowds. The Astros, not only are the Astros have not have anybody booing them, but there's you know, we make fun of the Rays, but I think we've seen what playoff crowds look like there and what it would look like for a Game 7. They don't have to deal with any of that. That's, I mean, okay, the Rays bat last. That's the only advantage that they can have here, CJ.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the entire season they avoided it. And it did seem like for a while there, especially in September, that they were just kind of out of energy. And I think that they were still feeling it. I mean, I guess if you were an Astro this year and you decided to check your social media, you were gonna hear about it. I mean, there was just no avoiding it. That was really the only place that you would get it. I mean, if you wanted to, you could really separate yourself from all of that noise and all the criticism. But the way that they carry themselves, especially the guys that had been there and been a big part of this, they just didn't look like they had the energy. We had somehow they figured out how to turn it on, and there's been no effect in the postseason whatsoever. And they look like that team that we saw from 2017 to 19 that had been playing really well, looked like they could win a World Series year in and year out. Now they're definitely doing it differently with some young pitching. And I'll be honest with you, Sweeney, I'm shocked that they've been able to hang in there as long as they have in a longer series, because their bullpen was such a question mark. Like, you know, they used some of these starters in the wild card round, and that was fine, but you can't, it's tough to do over a 7-game series when you're a little bit thin in your rotation.
Yeah.
And guys have really stepped up. I mean, yes, they're hitting, and not everybody's hitting, but Carlos Correa is hitting, and George Springer's doing his thing, and they've had the big moments. But it really has been the pitchers that a lot of people probably had never heard of, and some of them in the big leagues for the first time that have done some really important things for them in their bullpen. And, man, they're sitting in a really good spot. And it would be amazing. I don't say that in a good way, because I think I'm like the average fan. I don't really want to see them advance. Not this year. We'll get over it eventually. But
yeah,
I'd like at least a year off of seeing them in the postseason if we could. But and especially in the World Series. But they're in a pretty decent spot. It's going to be a good game tonight.
To the X's and O's part of it, I heard you guys debating the bunt, Martin Maldonado's bunt. And, you know, listen, I love Spilly. My eyes kind of rolled back into my head as he's reading off all the percentages and stuff.
Same.
Yeah. Gotta boil that down a little. Gotta get a little tighter, Spilly. But it worked because of who the hitter was. You know, okay, it was Martin Maldonado, and you had the top of the lineup coming up. This would not have been a question or an issue if you were in the middle of the order. And actually, I give George Springer a lot of credit here, because that's not the type of swing. Like, I know he's, you know, I had to go back and look up and remind myself, he doesn't strike out nearly as much as he did a couple of years ago, a little earlier in his career, a little bit better balance here. But that's not the type of swing you see anybody take these days. And with three guys on the left side of the infield drawn in, I would question that a little bit, but that's not a swing that I was expecting him to make. And, you know, credit him for doing it and getting it done.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, right? He definitely swings out of his shoes pretty often, and it's a lot of pull power that he has. And he probably knew, because there was also three infielders on the left side of the infield. So what does that tell you? They're probably going to pitch you in. They're going to get you to try to pull the ball. And so if you're anticipating that and there's one infielder on the right side and you can get your hands in and you're willing to do it and take that chance and just hit the ball to the right side and not try to crush it, you can do what he did. I mean, that was a routine ground ball, 92 miles an hour. That's a routine ground ball to the right side if the infield was playing normal. Now, is he taking that same swing if they are? Probably not. So you sit there and try to play the what-if game, but you really can't because things would have been different. His approach probably would have been different in that spot. And who knows, maybe he hits a double instead if they're playing straight up because of the kind of swings that he usually takes. But you have to give him credit. And I know fans want to see some more of that because they don't like seeing the shifts, at least when it's their team and they end up losing hits or guys just hit right into the shift. But what he did wasn't easy.
Yeah,
he made it look pretty easy. He executed in a big spot, but it's really tough because then what you don't want to do is try to do that and you dribble a ball back to the pitcher and you feel like you didn't even put your best swing forward. Right? It didn't work out. You did get jammed and you didn't get the run in. So it's difficult to commit to those things. I know fans want to see it a little bit more, and some guys are doing their best to try to counteract it, but it's really tough to do. But he did come through in a big spot, and then they were so good. Like the Rays have not allowed any inherited runners to score until that inning.
Wow.
0 of the 26 inherited runners did not score this entire postseason until that moment. I mean, it was just meant to be. And so we're going to get a seventh game, and in the Rays' pen for the first time in a while, really was unable to come through.
And, you still have Castillo, though he pitched yesterday, but, Fairbanks, Anderson, rested. I mean, do the Rays have, I feel like this is going to be a great test here because you got Dusty Baker, who's, obviously old school. He's got obviously some tools with him because the Astros are who they are, but, he's going to manage with a little bit of feel. And you got Kevin Cash, who's probably scripted this out about three different ways and hoping to stick to one of them. Does anybody have an advantage here, or is it just, hey, listen, this is game seven?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on it. The advantage comes to your starting pitcher and who can keep you in it. Now, I would say that when you look at the two bullpens, not just from a personnel standpoint, from a rest standpoint, that the Rays are probably in better shape. Curtis has thrown 3 out of 4. I'm just kind of looking at it right now. And for the most part, everybody else should be pretty good. And so they have, like you said, a good stable of guys. I mean, Anderson threw those 21 pitches 2 days ago. That's the only time he's pitched in the last 4 days. So he should be really strong. He's a guy that very easily could throw two innings. But you look on the flip side of things, Ryan Presley's thrown 3 days in a row.
Right.
39 pitches in the last 3 days. He's their closer. He's their one veteran down in that bullpen right now that they feel like they can always count on, and he may not be at 100%. I mean, adrenaline can get you through a lot. Scrub just pitched in back-to-back days and 48 pitches. Blake Taylor, not a lot of pitches, but has thrown 3 out of 4 days. So they're a little bit more worn down. I guess Paredes will probably be a guy that could play a role here in this one, and we'll see how they feel about using Javier. Christian Javier has been another nice surprise for them. He's pitched 2 out of the last 3 with a decent amount of pitches. So from the standpoint of advantage, not because, again, of the personnel, but who should be rested and ready to go, Tampa seems to be in the driver's seat, but that doesn't mean Lance McCullers Jr. can't deliver 6 or 7 strong, and then the Astros are in a pretty decent spot as well. And it's also your tougher at-bats for the Rays facing the Astros hitters than it is for the Astros pitchers facing the Rays hitters right now.
I feel like the Rays, some of what we think about the Rays, that's kind of being turned on its head a little bit because the Rays are a team that strikes out a lot. They are a team that has gotten to this point because they've hit a lot of home runs in big spots from the bottom of their order against the Yankees. Randy Arozarena doing his thing. If it's not for these home runs, they've been bounced a long time ago. And Brandon Lau's playing the outfield. I mean, I guess we can debate how big a play it turned out to be in the final outcome, but throwing to the wrong base as an outfielder in Game 6 of a playoff series, well, that's a pretty big issue, and the Rays are the team that's supposed to be doing everything right. Their great versatility is fantastic, but the inexperience in that outfield spot showed. The Rays are, I mean, they've gotten here not the way we think they've gotten here, CJ.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think, not only say they're getting exposed a little bit, but, there is that part when you're bouncing players around and then all of a sudden something happens. Or maybe, we talk about taking at bats into the field, and sometimes your concentration is not where it's supposed to be, or you're not anticipating what could be happening, and you make that kind of mistake. I mean, even with the Braves putting Austin Riley in the outfield the other day, and you really quickly realize that's probably not a good idea. you sit there and you try to get your bats in there the best that you can, and there's an assumption that you can put different players in different spots, and you know what you're putting out there, and there's times you're hoping that they won't hit it to that guy. But it does happen, and so you're right. I mean, those little things show up, and now since we're going to have both of these series go to a Game 7, I mean, they're always big in the postseason anyway, but they're especially big when you think about going to these Game 7. You know, what you were talking about reminds me of, and also has to do with scouting. I remember when the Kansas City Royals made their run and they were playing the Toronto Blue Jays, there was a ball hit to the right field corner. It's kind of one of those random things that I remember. But Jose Bautista went in and just kind of lobbed the ball into second base. Mm-hmm. And they'd known that he had done that before, and they were ready for it. And whoever was on first ended up scoring from first on it. I don't know if it was Lorenzo, I can't remember who was running. But they just they knew that that was the kind of thing that Jose Bautista did. And those are those little things that you try to take advantage of, whether the player's making a mistake or it's just a habit and your advanced scouting has it down, and all of a sudden something's happening in a really important game that shouldn't happen.
CJ, when do we hear you next? You got more shows coming up here this weekend?
Oh, yeah, I got a couple next week. I'm usually Tuesdays and Thursdays on MLB Network Radio. I think I have an extra fill-in day on Friday, and then I'm always Saturdays with Stilly. So it's that time that can't complain, man. Roll out of bed, roll into the office, and meet Steve Phillips on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 to 10 a.m. on MLB Network Radio.
Just watch that long mic cord. It almost bit me at the start of this. And, watch out for that rolling chair, buddy.
Always, always.
CJ, thanks for helping us break it down. Enjoy watching the game. And I'm sure we'll definitely hear you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Sounds good to me. Good to talk to you.
You too. That's CJ Nitkowski, MLB Network Radio. Of course, longtime major leaguer, New York area kid, and one of the bright minds to listen to as we break down what's happening.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.